Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we preview the 22nd Annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, which takes place this weekend. It gets underway tomorrow and runs through Sunday at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association headquarters in Custer, Wisconsin, on Highway 10 east of Stevens Point. Our guests for the next hour, here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio, Doug Stingle, the Outreach Director for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, and joining us by telephone, Saturday afternoon's keynote speaker, Chris Payne, the writer, director, and producer of the critically acclaimed film, Who Killed the Electric Car? Now, this is the movie that chronicles the rise and fall of General Motors' groundbreaking all-electric vehicle, the EV1, which was introduced in California, won a legion of fans because of its speed, efficiency, and style, and then was withdrawn from the market as GM forced all of the EV1 owners to return their cars to the company so they could be destroyed. Mr. Payne has a new film out, a critically acclaimed film called Revenge of the Electric Car, which tells the story of the comeback of electric vehicles. Now, as always, we're taking your phone calls today. If you've got a question for Chris Payne, a comment about electric vehicles, concern about the future of renewable energy, or if you'd like to comment on the situation here in Wisconsin with the governor's decision to kill high-speed rail and put severe restrictions on wind energy development, our lines are open. You can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Now, Doug Stingle has been very busy for the last few days getting everything ready for the 22nd Annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, and he's been hung up on the road, but he will be with us shortly. So we're going to start out with Chris Payne, who joins us by telephone. Chris, you're the keynote speaker Saturday afternoon. What are you going to be talking about?
Do I get a key with that?
I hope so. Maybe it's a key to an all-electric vehicle. That would be nice.
That would be nice. Well, I think I'm going to be talking about why the electric car is back, or seems to be coming back, with such force, and why we can probably be excited about that.
Now, your first documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car, was critically acclaimed. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2006. It was released by Sony Pictures Classics. I imagine a lot of people who are listening right now have seen it. It was one of the most successful documentaries of the past 5 years. And you managed to really capture the decisions that led to the death of the General Motors electric vehicle as they were happening. My question to you, as a filmmaker, how did you get plugged into this story early enough to capture that video that you needed for the documentary?
Well, that's one of those things where once you get into the story, you just start filming things. And I was lucky enough to have leased one of those GM EV1s back in the day. I think 1997 is when I got my car. So I had the car for 5 years. And because there are only about 1,200 of the cars out there and maybe 5,000 from all the car makers combined, it was a pretty small community. So you began to get dialed into what everybody was doing, and when things started to happen, we would send cameras out there in case they made sense for the story.
And it was quite a story with protests as these vehicles were withdrawn from the market, the whole idea that you couldn't go out and buy one of these electric vehicles. They forced you to lease them, and then when they decided to take them off the market, they forced everybody to turn the vehicles back in. Pretty traumatic for some of these people who were driving those cars.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I don't even really care about cars that much. I mean, I didn't then, and I think the electric car was sort of a symbol of the future coming around the bend and progress, the kind of progress that we probably all need. So when that we could see that program about to really get destroyed, we thought, well, this is more than just a car story. It's about why it's difficult to get things to change and, you know, what kinds of things are happening behind the scenes that create that resistance.
But things are changing. Your new documentary, again, Revenge of the Electric Car, it debuted at the – do you pronounce this Tribeca or Tribeca, the film festival, just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, that's right. Well, we premiered at Tribeca on Earth Day, which is a really great venue for us because there's a lot of international media that covers New York stories, and the timing was excellent. We just had an opportunity it's so rare to see a major industry turn around on a big issue like this. And we thought, well, we didn't think we were going to do another electric car film, but we already know the contacts, and it's one of those things that it looks like things might change for the better. So let's see what kind of story we have.
Well, we're going to be talking about that in depth in just a bit. I want to in fact focus a great deal of the show on that film and the first one. But Doug Stengel has joined us, and Doug, Chris's appearance at the Energy Fair coincides with the unveiling of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Solar Carport and Electric Vehicle Changing Station. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Glenn. It's a really exciting project that we've been working on with, in combination with a couple of sponsors, Northwind Renewable Energy out of Stevens Point, as well as Clipper Creek Charging Stations and Mage Solar. And we've set up this brand new 2.2-kilowatt solar electric car charging station that will kind of unveil a little ribbon cutting maybe on Saturday when Chris is doing his keynote. But it's a really exciting project, and it's the first of its kind in central Wisconsin.
And it is the 22nd annual fair. It starts tomorrow, and it's really grown throughout the years. 20,000 people attend each year, and it's not the easiest place to get to for a lot of folks in Wisconsin. I mean, you are on Highway 10 east of Stevens Point, but 20,000 people, that's got to like be 20 times, 40 times, 50 times the normal population of Custer?
It absolutely is. Most folks don't quite know where Custer is. And if you blink, you go past it. I think we've got a couple of bars and a post office. So, but it certainly turns a very small town in Wisconsin into a renewable energy and sustainable living hotspot in the country.
You've got more than 200 exhibitors again this year?
Yes, we've got over 200 exhibitors. We've got over 200 workshops where people can kind of come and learn about things that they can take home with them and make some changes in their lives to save some money and save some energy.
Let's look at some of the broad categories of these workshops: alternative construction and green building, community projects, educator workshops, energy conservation, financing and economics, food, herbs, gardening and landscaping, heating and cooling, issues and activism, professional development, and something called the Rainbow's End, which I guess is a potpourri of all the optimistic things that are happening in the field of renewable energy.
Well, actually, Rainbow's End is the children's area that we have.
Well, the children are the future.
The children are the future. And we even have some workshops going in there for the kids. And we have a free play area as well. But they are the future, and they have a parade around the fairgrounds every Saturday morning. So it's a lot of fun.
We've got Chris Payne, your keynote speaker, with us today for Saturday. Tell us about tomorrow's keynote speaker, Will Allen.
Yeah, we are thrilled to have Will Allen come and speak at the Energy Fair. I've been trying to get Will for quite some time to come to the fair. He's a pretty popular guy and in high demand. He was named one of Time Magazine's top 100 influential people in 2010. He's won a MacArthur Award, a Genius Grant, and is doing just some wonderful work down in Milwaukee and Chicago. And I know he's looking to expand out a little bit further with Growing Power. And they're really kind of working on urban food systems so that everyone, no matter where they live, if they live in a city, today they don't really have very good access to good food, to organic produce, things like that. So Will is expanding those markets there. And he's really a true visionary, and we're very excited to have him.
Okay. Musical acts again this year, entertainment?
We'll absolutely have some musical acts this year. We'll have our Energy Fair house band, if you will, on Friday night, Baba Ganoush from Waupaca area. And they've been playing the Energy Fair, I think, for about 15 years now. So we always have them. And we'll have on Saturday, we'll have three different bands, Mark and Gay Lynn, Bandwagon from Madison, and then another disco funk band called VO5. So we'll be dancing Saturday night away.
Now, this year's fair, as a backdrop, we have some developments politically in Wisconsin that have caused some concern among people who are advocates of renewable energy. We've got exhibits and workshops, again, on wind energy at the fair. But the governor has enacted new restrictions on wind farms in Wisconsin. Critics say that for all practical purposes, this has killed wind energy in the state. How are your exhibitors reacting to these developments?
Well, certainly a lot of folks are not very happy about that, especially when it comes to creating jobs. These wind farms that come into our communities and come into the state of Wisconsin, not only do they produce renewable energy that we can all use, they also produce jobs. And for a governor that ran on a platform that said that he was all about jobs, a lot of people were questioning, why not these jobs? What's wrong with these jobs? Why can't we have wind siting here? So there are a lot of folks that are talking about it, and I know that it's going to be a topic of conversation, certainly within the wind working group that'll be put on at the Energy Fair.
And we've got a Wisconsin Rapids firm, Energy Composites. They had big plans to build giant wind turbines for wind energy farms in the region. Those plans would have employed 600 people, but again, with the restrictions on wind energy coming out of Madison, those plans are now on hold indefinitely. Are we seeing this all over the state, where you have businesses that were looking to expand and hire people, and right now all those plans are on hold?
For sure. There were two or three wind farm developments that were going to go into the state that have since pulled out and will not happen because the regulation just doesn't allow it anymore. So I think we're a missed opportunity for the state of Wisconsin.
And part of the push for energy independence also involves getting people out of their vehicles onto public transportation. What message did the governor send when he killed high-speed rail?
Wow. Well, I certainly don't think it was a great message. I thought it was personally a little bit short-sighted. When people referred to the rail line, they kept referring to it as the Milwaukee to Madison rail line. But in reality, once you get to Milwaukee, you get to Chicago, and then once you're in Chicago, you go anywhere. And it was also part of a broader corridor that was going to connect Chicago and Minneapolis. So I don't know if that corridor is now not going to go through Wisconsin. There's a good chance it'll go through Illinois and Iowa and up to Minneapolis now. So, again, just another giant missed opportunity.
But it is could have been a vital corridor linking two major cities, and it would have gone right through Wisconsin.
Absolutely. I can think of several times that it would have, when I've flown out of Chicago, when it would have been nice to just drive to Madison, hop the train, and take the train right to Chicago.
And you would have avoided all of those parking fees in downtown Chicago, too. We've got Doug Stingle of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. We're talking about this weekend's 22nd annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. And Chris Payne, we're really excited to have him with us for the next hour. He's the guy who produced, directed, and wrote Who Killed the Electric Car? And he's got a great new movie out called Revenge of the Electric Car. We want to hear from you. We've got wide open phone lines right now, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Doug Stingle about this weekend's Energy Fair, or Chris Payne about electric cars, or if you've got comments about the future of renewable energy in Wisconsin and across the nation, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair and electric cars with Doug Stingle of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association and Chris Payne, who produced and wrote two movies about electric cars, Who Killed the Electric Car and Revenge of the Electric Car. Chris, you kind of borrowed a title there from Who Killed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what we got started, because you ever watch Who Killed the Roger Rabbit? It's about what happened to all those streetcars we used to have around the entire country, including Los Angeles and all over the Midwest. And, of course, they were those tracks and those lines were pulled up and by the auto companies and the oil companies back in the late 40s, early 50s. So we thought, well, if we're doing a story about what happened to electric cars, and that's let's maybe give a nod to that film.
Now, General Motors not only bought up those city trolley lines and then shut them down, but there's a whole history of this kind of collaboration between the auto industry and the oil companies. Back in the 20s and 30s, Henry Ford and Firestone collaborated to kill the rail industry, at least those are the allegations, and get the government to build highways. And then in your first movie, you interview a guy named Stanford Ovshinsky, who developed this new battery technology to make it possible to drive long distances on a single charge. General Motors not only bought his company, but kept him from publicizing the technology and then sold the company and the battery rights to an oil company, Chevron Texaco. So we've seen this happen before.
Yeah, well, you know, following those trails, the old ones, are always very difficult. And, of course, you guys are going, you know, right now in Wisconsin, you're dealing with, like, well, what happened to our high-speed rail plant and our windmills? I mean, it's not a very... not a very tough thing to figure out what happened there, but these are very difficult trails to follow, especially when you're talking about what happened in the 50s with streetcars, for example, because, you know, arguably people came back from World War II and nobody was really into streetcars because the automobile was so romantic and sexy and so forth. So we just had a unique opportunity to tell the story of piece by piece what happens when something gets taken apart. And the good news is that a few years later, we're looking at what it takes to put things back together. And I hope that our presentation at the fair this weekend is really about optimism and change moving forward, even when we're confronted with so many obstacles.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with what Chris said. And that's what the Energy Fair does, is it allows allows people that have had run into these obstacles and can see the way that things are working to be able to connect with others that are thinking kind of along the same lines that they are, and be able to kind of go back to their communities and take action. And Glenn mentioned Stan Ovshinsky. He's quite a character, and I love him. And he also is the inventor of some thin film solar panels that are a really cool product as well. But the Energy Fair is a great opportunity to meet people that are thinking like you, and you together we can kind of create this grassroots movement.
Yeah, and despite all the setbacks that Stan had, his battery ended up being the default battery technology that's in every Prius on the road. So I think it's a great time to celebrate a lot of the successes we've had in trying to steer the world away from a pure fossil fuel industry world, and I think that's the reason I like to participate in a fair like this.
You know, that was one of the ironies that you mentioned, Chris, in the first film, is that President Clinton really pushed the development of hybrid vehicle technology, and the American car makers walked away from it, but the Japanese car makers certainly paid attention. And now we've got the Prius and Honda all leading hybrid vehicle technology, when perhaps American automakers could have been in the forefront.
Yeah, and I think that's why American car makers are hustling so hard now, not to be at the end of the line for the plug-in revolution, which I would argue is really around the bend. And that's what my talk will be about. It's like, every American car maker is pretty much in the game now with plug-in cars, and if anybody is a laggard on this, it seems like it might be Toyota. So sort of a little irony there.
When you talk about plug-in cars, do you need to rewire your house in order to get an electric plug that provides more power and more voltage to the vehicle in order to recharge it, or will it be possible to recharge your car from a standard electric outlet?
Oh yeah, the idea is that they work on any outlet. So the nation's already wired at 110, and you can get a good enough charge for a round the town type driver just off of your 110 overnight. But faster chargers, 220 circuits, the kind that we use to, you know, run our washing machines, or the kind that's in that probably the circuit that's in the demo unit that will be at the Energy Fair this weekend, are 220, and those things charge the cars a lot faster, especially when you're looking at, like, trying to get more charge every day.
Yeah, and we have done a conversion on our Prius at the MREA. We have a 2007 Prius, and we've converted it to an aftermarket plug-in electric hybrid, and that just plugs into the standard 110, like Chris said. So when I drive it home at night, I just plug it into the outlet in my garage, and it charges in about 3 to 6 hours. And I do also want to mention that Toyota is going to be bringing one of their prototype plug-in electric Priuses, one of only 10 in the country, and it's going to be at the fair this weekend. So I'd be very fascinated to check that out.
Oh, yeah, me too. I actually haven't seen one, so that's cool.
Yeah.
How easy is it to convert an existing car into a plug-in electric vehicle?
If the Prius that we converted, the company did it in a day. It takes them probably about 4 to 6 hours to do the conversion, and then they take it, they run the battery down, and then they recharge it again, make sure everything the charge took, and then I got it back the next morning. So it really was a one-day process. And they do conversions on Priuses and a couple of other hybrids like the Ford Escape, and I think there's one other, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. But the company that we worked with was a company called Rego Electric Conversions out of Minneapolis, and they just opened an office in Madison as well.
And in past years, you've shown people how to convert their vehicles to biodiesel. Are we going to see more of that this weekend?
Absolutely. We'll have a hands-on demonstration where folks can see how to do a conversion. There'll be a mechanic from Minnesota coming to show you how to do that conversion, as well as a hydrogen assist conversion as well.
Doug Stengel of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, Chris Payne, the keynote speaker this Saturday, the guy who directed Who Killed the Electric Car and who has now directed a critically acclaimed film, Revenge of the Electric Car. We'll be back with more and your calls and questions right after this news.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, talking about the 22nd Annual Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair taking place this weekend, starting tomorrow, in beautiful Custer, Wisconsin, several miles east of Stevens Point on Highway 10. We've got Doug Stengel of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association with us, and we're really excited to have Chris Payne, who is the writer, director, and producer of a couple of great movies on electric vehicles, Who Killed the Electric Car, and his new one, Revenge of the Electric Car. Chris will be the keynote speaker Saturday afternoon. The only people missing are you. We've still got wide open phone lines here, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to weigh in on electric vehicles, the automotive industry, the oil companies, the future of wind energy in Wisconsin, our lines are open, 1-800-780-9742. Chris, you'll be showing a movie Saturday night, another movie about an all-electric motorcycle race. The movie is called Charge, subtitled Zero Emissions, Maximum Speed. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I'm very proud of this film. We finished it just about the same time we finished Revenge of the Electric Car, and we're going to have a special preview screening for 100 people or so on Saturday night at the fair. Basically, it follows a bunch of converters of all walks of life as they compete in a high-speed motorcycle race on the Isle of Man, which, of course, is famous for its motorcycle racing. And it's a terrific film, and I helped produce it, and I'm proud to be showing it.
You know, a lot of people have the impression that electric vehicles are slow, that they can't accelerate, they can't drive as fast as vehicles that use the internal combustion engine, but that just isn't the case.
Yeah, really, it's not. For a long time, they were almost purposely marketed as being slow, and why would you ever want to have one of these cars? And in fact, they have the best torque you can get from any kind of propulsion system, except maybe a rocket. The new Tesla Roadster actually has been on the market for a couple years. It's got 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds, and these motorcycles can be even faster than that. So it's a high-speed game, and I think part of our mission, or, you know, what I like to do is make films that that promote the excitement of this technology, not just that it's something we have to do because of oil or the environment, things like that.
Well, they certainly, you know, General Motors certainly didn't advertise the EV1 by draping the cars with sexy women and men, which is how they seem to advertise, you know, all of their other vehicles.
Yeah, no, by the time they were marketing that car that way, they were pretty much trying to put that whole program to bed. And you'll see how GM today and really Nissan and everybody that's jumping into the electric car, the plug-in revolution, if you will, now, are marketing these cars in a very different way. And I think the consumers are going to be a lot more interested in them.
Let's talk about this new film of yours, Revenge of the Electric Car. It's gotten some great reviews. Let me read some of them. From The Hollywood Reporter, even the most skeptical global warming deniers are apt to find themselves rooting for this disparate group of risk-takers who may well be spearheading the long-delayed transition from oil reliance to new technology. Vanity Fair, with unprecedented insider access, Payne presents a film that is less an environmental Jeremiah than a portrait of the automotive industry as it seeks to catch up with the 21st century. Esquire magazine, the follow-up to Who Killed the Electric Car, is distinguished by the unguarded access, and it names three CEOs and calls them colorful supervillains who might just save the planet. Is that the case? Has the car industry really turned around to the point where these supervillains might just save the planet?
Well, I see that may be going a little bit far. You know, car companies are in it for money, and they see that there's money in the future if they finally, you know, make a new generation of cars that are going to appeal to a lot of people that have the advantage of not running on oil. And the four people, that the entrepreneurs that we profiled, one happens to run Nissan, and he used to run Michelin. Incredible, charismatic, hard-hitting businessman. One's Bob Lutz, who's been Mr. Detroit from way back. He's kind of like a modern-day Mad Men. And then we profiled a converter, and finally Elon Musk, who sold his PayPal company to eBay and made a fortune and decided that he'd just drive his car right around Detroit. So we've got kind of a very interesting race, and we thought this will be a fun way to tell the story of how we get into the future.
We got an email from John from Austin who asks, if we have these electric vehicles, how can we apply them? How can we use them in rural living if you're out in the country? And apparently he's worried about what a lot of people have concerns about, is that, you know, you can't drive 100 miles or 200 miles in one of these vehicles between charges.
Yeah, and that's a great concern. And the answer to that, the real answer, is that these cars are most practical in an economic sense for city livers. I think the average person in the United States on an aggregate drives his car 30 miles or less per day. And an electric car, this generation that's coming out, all have about a range of about 100 miles. But this is why General Motors and now Ford have said, no, you can't have a pure electric car because, you know, your folks that don't live in cities need a car that's going to go 200 miles every once in a while. And so they put their electric car, they put a gasoline engine in there, and after you drive the first 40 miles, why, the gasoline kicks in, you get a longer range car. So that's a transition technology that I think is going to play a really great role until batteries can hit all these other numbers that people are looking for.
Yeah, and I'd like to go back to a point where Glenn read that quote about how the car companies are going to come in and save the world. What I think is fascinating, and certainly what folks can come and learn at the fair this weekend, is we'll have workshops on how to build your own electric car. So we at the Energy Fair, and I think a lot of the people that come to the Energy Fair, are going to be able to kind of try and take some of that into their own hands and not necessarily wait for the car companies to do it. I mean, it's important. We definitely need them to do it. But if they see the need and they see that there are a lot of people are out there even doing the conversions, they're going to become even more responsive to it. So we'll have workshops at the fair on how to build your own electric car and how to build your own electric motorcycle, both of which we're really excited about.
Yeah, that's where innovation starts. It starts with people doing it in their garages. Whether you're talking about the first personal computer or the new generation of cars or motorcycles, it all begins with people saying, you know, we're going to do this. Because corporations rarely look down into the future like they should. And I think you'll find in the electric car movement and really all these movements that it begins on a very personal level.
Chris Payne, director of Who Killed the Electric Car and now Revenge of the Electric Car, and Doug Stingle of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to either of these gentlemen about the future of renewable energy or the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair this weekend in Custer, Wisconsin, let's go to the phones. We have Joan in Park Falls, excuse me. Joan, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thanks. Where can I find, like, an itinerary? I probably can do one day, but three is going to be pushing it with my schedule. Because I'm really interested in the biodiesel information.
Sure, Joan. If you go to our website, which is MidwestRenew.org, we have the entire program guide up there right on our homepage. You'll be able to download it. It's a PDF, and that'll give you all the workshops, descriptions, and times. Again, that's MidwestRenew.org.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. Thanks for the call, Joan. It seems, we've got the electric car making a big comeback. We've got the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt, all these hybrids on the market. Can either of you gentlemen, maybe I'm asking a question that you can't answer, but I'm hoping you can. Can you give us a rundown of the new vehicles on the market, their strong points and weak points, how far you can go on a charge, whether you can use standard outlets, if they're hybrids, how much mileage per gallon, how much they cost, and whether there's any government rebates to help with the purchase?
Wow, well, that's a big list there. I feel like I'm standing outside the car dealership, but they're good questions.
Well, either of you gentlemen able to help me out? We've got the Nissan Leaf, we've got the Chevy Volt, and what are the other players right now?
Well, we are still early in this game. The Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Volt are each being built in one factory each. I think their output numbers are something like 10,000 for 2011. And I've heard that the Volt isn't even available in Wisconsin yet. They're beginning to crawl here all over Los Angeles, but I hear that they're having to, like, dole them out. And the reason for it is that they want to make sure that their first cars are solid and doing everything that people want them to do. And I think they're finding that they are. The Leaf's the same deal. Although next year they are opening a plant in Tennessee. So you'll begin to see a lot more of those. Now, their price, those two cars I know the most about because, we feature part of their stories in our movies. The Leaf is priced at $32,000, and in California, that you subtract from that $5,000 state rebate because the state's trying to get people into electric cars, and another $7,500 on a federal tax break, and so you're talking about a car that's closer to $22,000-$23,000, and that begins to get affordable for a lot of people.
Right, and the Chevy Volt is higher price than that, correct?
That's correct. I think I saw an ad yesterday. They were advertising it at $32,000 after rebates, but I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, and I saw an article in the news the other day that when they are releasing it wider availability in the fall, that they're going to take the price down $1,000 off of it as well. So take that down, take the $7,500 tax credit, and, yeah, you're around $31,000,
$32,000. Bit by bit, inch by inch.
Yeah.
But conversions are usually cheaper, and that's why, a lot of the kinds of folks that are attracted to the energy fair are like going, hey, why do I need to buy a whole new car? Why don't I just take this car that already suits me fine? And, it's usually better that it's a fairly late model car because it has airbags, has all that safety stuff in. Drop the engine and put in a motor and either a low-cost lead-acid battery system for, just a round-of-town car or a more expensive battery pack for a longer-range car.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. Frank in Superior. Frank, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I have a couple questions, and I'll ask them and then hang up to listen to the response. But you mentioned fossil fuel and trying to get away from the dependence on fossil fuel. And I'm just wondering what the sort of impact that the restrictions that the EPA is putting on any sort of development of nuclear and coal and petroleum as well. I mean, it seems to me that most of the electricity that we get is derived from coal. The impact that it has on the environment. And also my second question, after the life of the battery is used up, what sort of impact is that going to have on landfills and groundwater? And is there a recycling program for the battery?
And Chris Payne, Frank's first comment about coal-fired power plants, that was one of the objections raised to the early electric vehicles in your first movie.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they were basically saying you're just substituting a bigger tailpipe.
Right.
You know, the smokestack
right.
for the
It's a good argument.
Plant.
And it took the environmental groups even a while to figure out that, wait a moment, this is not the same thing. Electric car does not equal coal power. It can equal coal power if your grid is 100% coal. And if it is 100% coal, you still have some advantages because the electric motor and the battery systems are so efficient compared to what you can do on a well-to-wheel basis with gasoline. But the big plus for environmental plus, and I think most environmental groups are really behind this now, is that the cars are very efficient and you can run them on renewable energy. So in the U.S., we're a 50% coal grid, which means instantly they're 50% cleaner than running a gasoline vehicle. And as we begin to deploy these cars over the next 20 years, I hope, and maybe they won't ever replace gas cars entirely, at least not in my lifetime, but that grid gets cleaner and the cars get cleaner to go with them.
Yeah, and I remember, Chris, the presentation that I saw you give in Appleton a couple months ago. You had a wonderful slide in there of the giant transformers and all the power lines going into the oil refinery. So there's a lot of electricity that goes into that gallon of gas that's probably coming from a coal-fired plant as well. And certainly the batteries, once you're done with them, while they may not be able to be used for a car, you can certainly use them for a purpose that's not quite as intense, or they absolutely get recycled. Battery recycling is one of the best recycling industries that we have.
And that answers the second part of Frank's question. We're talking to Doug Stingel of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association about this weekend's 22nd annual energy fair in beautiful Custer, Wisconsin, east of Stevens Point. And keynote speaker Chris Payne, the director of Who Killed the Electric Car, and also the new movie Revenge of the Electric Car. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We'll be back with your calls after this.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy Stevens Point, partnering with Focus on Energy to provide clean, renewable energy for Wisconsin residents, specializing in Velux residential solar hot water systems. Learn more at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. Doug Stingel of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association and Chris Payne of Who Killed the Electric Car, and also the new movie Revenge of the Electric Car. He'll be the keynote speaker this Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Energy Fair. Let's go back to the phones. Rob in Wausau. You're on Route 51. Hello, Rob.
Hi. I've had something that's been bothering me for some time about automobiles and why they can't put a very small gasoline engine in one and have it drive an electric motor to charge batteries. And because the engine only has to run at one speed to generate electricity, it could be made much more efficient than the ones that, you know, provide propulsion because they have to run at a whole wide range of speeds.
I think that's the technology behind the Chevy Volt. Is that correct, Chris?
You know, I couldn't hear the question very well on my line.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rob is asking why they don't come up with a vehicle with just a really small small gasoline-powered engine in order to charge the battery as you're going along.
Oh yeah, that's exactly right. That's what the Volt is. But you know, it's not such a small engine because the Volt's designed. It's a relatively small engine, but it doesn't ever drive the transmission directly except in an extreme situation. It's got to be able to turn the car into a 35 mile per gallon car once your battery power is depleted. So it's doing a lot of things at once, and I think that's why they've won so many awards for this car, because they really sort of hit the sweet spot of what's possible with a, quote, small engine.
Quite a turnaround for General Motors after their history with the first electric vehicle.
I'll say. I mean, that's why we thought, okay, we've got to tell this story. How often does this happen? We were really shocked, and I, you know, it's not like they're an all new company, but I think they really understood that they made some serious errors with what happened on the EV1, and they wanted to try to get the mantle back.
Well, they're kind of a new company. They went through a bailout and a restructuring, and President Obama kind of put his thumbprint in there by getting the CEO to resign.
That's a great point. They really are. I mean, yeah, it's the first time I think in American history that a CEO was fired by the American president, and once Rick was gone, who had sort of led the truck revolution at General Motors, a new management team eventually came into place, and I think it's very much a new era there.
Rob, you're still on the line. Do you have a follow-up question, or did we answer your question for you?
Well, I guess the statement that the motor, the gasoline engine, still is available to drive the car kind of, you know, eliminates the efficiencies that could be... I mean, when you have a gasoline engine that has to run a lot of speeds, you know, as it would to be able to run an automobile, the important things like valve timing and tuning the length of the exhaust and the intake and all these things that could be done to wring maximum efficiency out of the engine kind of go away because it has to operate at a whole bunch of speeds and you can't tune it for just one.
Chris, were you able to hear that?
Yes, I was. Yeah, okay. It's a great point, and I think you are definitely a candidate for a pure electric vehicle as opposed to one that's where you're carrying an engine around with you. Is anytime you have an engine, you have a lot more potential service issues over time. If you talk to the folks at Tesla, you know their new Model S they're coming out with next year. It's going to come in different battery choices. You could get like a 140-mile battery range. You can get a 200-mile battery or a 280-mile battery range, and they don't ever want to see an engine in a vehicle. But the good news here, I think, for everybody is that there's finally some options. After nearly 100 years monopoly of the gasoline engine, it looks like we're changing.
Rob, thanks so much for the phone call. When the whole thing happened where the electric vehicles had their big demise in California, about that same time, President Bush said hydrogen fuel cell vehicles would be the future of the automotive industry. What happened to that?
Doug, do you want to try that one?
Well, I still don't see a hydrogen fuel cell station anywhere near me. And I love in the movie that Chris has when they show the Toyota fuel cell vehicle, and the guy says that it would cost about $1 million to manufacture that, or it did cost over $1 million. I just haven't seen hydrogen fuel cells, and maybe they're a little more prevalent in California, Chris. I'm not sure, but they're certainly not around here in Wisconsin.
No, it never took off. Because, you know, not only were the cars extremely expensive to build, even more expensive than what people worried about with electric battery-powered cars, but the cost of making hydrogen fuel has turned out to be incredibly expensive, and they make it out of natural gas, so you're not necessarily solving any problem.
You know, there seems to be a backlash right now against current scientific thinking from a number of quarters. A lot of people are denying the reality of climate change and global warming. And Doug was telling me he was on a different radio station this week, and they basically told him that there's no future in renewable energies. They'll never be cost effective. With this kind of backlash, why are you guys still so optimistic?
Well, I'm certainly optimistic because of the folks that I work with and the folks that come to the energy fair. You know, these people are the ones that, like Chris was talking about, the innovators that are starting the renewable energy industry and the electric car industry. They're the folks that are working on the solutions by themselves. They're not waiting for someone to do it. So I see all of these people that are working on these problems, and I know how dedicated and how passionate they are. And I can see that we need to go into that direction in the future. Certainly for, you know, I look at my son and I know that we need to do these things. And I just am really heartened to be able to be at a place like the Energy Fair and be at an organization with the MREA and see folks that are working towards these things.
Chris Payne, you've got the last word.
Well, I totally agree with Doug. You know, I'm always going to side with optimists and people who are making things happen for the better. No matter what period of history you're in, you're always going to have your laggards and your people that say it can't be done and why bother trying and nothing will ever change. And who wants to hang out with those people? So that's why I continue the work I do and try to find events like this where there's a lot of people who are inspired and are making the place a better.
Chris Payne, there'll be a lot of people hanging out with you Saturday afternoon, I suspect, at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Fair. Thank you so much for being with us. Also, thanks to Doug Stingel. Chris Payne is the writer, director, and producer of Who Killed the Electric Car and Revenge of the Electric Car. He'll be speaking at 1 p.m. on Saturday, the Energy Fair Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Midwest Renewable Energy site on Highway 10 in Custer, Wisconsin, east of Stevens Point. You can find out more at their website, midwestrenew.org, and you can find out more about Chris Payne's latest movie at revengeoftheelectriccar.com. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker and Jake Clotty. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by George Harrison and Jesse Colin Young. You can visit our Wisconsin Public Radio booth at the Energy Fair. I'll be there on Saturday. Rick Ryer will be there tomorrow. And our right-hand lady, Jane Ritker, will be there on Sunday. Thanks again for riding along with us today in your electric vehicle. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to